From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Adeline Baxter. About 60 people crowded into Riverside Baptist Church yesterday in Juneau. Most of them experienced flooding firsthand during the record-breaking glacial outburst in August. It was a second meeting of a community-led flood recovery group, which has convened to address gaps in cleanup and emergency planning for future floods. One of the group's priorities is finding a better system for warning and evacuation ahead of the next flood. Many community members worried about the possibility of another big flood this fall, after news circulated that Suicide Basin has started filling again. Experts now say another major flood this year is unlikely, but community organizers have arranged to have Juneau Taxi provide free evacuations for those with wheelchairs or other disabilities in the event of another outburst. People can contact Juneau Taxi directly to be put on an evacuation list. Representatives from the City and Borough of Juneau also attended the meeting. They recommended homeowners purchase a NOAA weather radio, which provides real-time updates on flooding. The city also soft-launched an opt-in emergency alert system, which they'll be rolling out officially soon. Community organizers have created a website, JunoFloodFightingGroup.com. They plan to consolidate flood mitigation ideas from FEMA and other sources there. The website also has a place for people to volunteer to help flood-affected residents that are working to rebuild. Two Juneau residents hunting on Admiralty Island last weekend ended up face-to-face with a brown bear. Luckily, everyone walked away from the encounter, but not without some battle scars. Amanda Compton and her friend Nicholas Orr have been hunting together for years. At the end of September, they took Compton's boat to a peninsula on Admiralty Island across from Port Snettisham. A few miles into their deer hunt, they were walking single file with Compton in the front through open muskeg. As they stopped by a grove of trees, a brown bear rushed them without warning.
I would say it was 2 seconds of seeing the bear, seeing and registering that it was charging full force for me, and also determining that I had no time to pull a shot off.
The bear was on Compton immediately. It grabbed her head in its jaws and shook her for a few seconds. She says it's hard to know exactly how long it lasted.
I was lucid through the whole thing. There just wasn't enough time to be terrorized.
Then, just as quickly, the bear released her and moved away. But it didn't leave. It watched from 10 or 15 feet away. Orr had fallen to the ground when the bear charged, but managed to get back to his feet and fire his gun. The bear ran back into the trees where they noticed a cub for the first time. They believe the sow and cub are fine. Compton's head was bleeding, a lot. Her hand was also injured. But she could walk and her mind felt mostly clear. She just couldn't believe she was alive.
I grew up here, not in Juneau, but in Alaska, and have enough friends that have, you know, gone out and about, and myself too. Like, I just didn't anticipate that having a large brown bear on me would do anything but the most extensive damage.
They decided to hike the few miles back out instead of call for help. In retrospect, she admits that may not have been the best call. After more than an hour, they made it back to her boat. Back in Juneau at Bartlett Regional Hospital, doctors cleaned and stapled gashes in Compton's scalp. She also got a few stitches, an x-ray, and a CT scan. Her hand is in a brace, and she doesn't have full use of it yet.
I've got, my Halloween costume put together early. It's just some Frankenstein. I mean, I look like a hybrid between Chucky and Frankenstein right now.
The sow also left something behind. A shard of tooth was embedded in Compton's scalp. Even with her injuries, Compton knows she's lucky.
It is more amazing to me that it literally gnawed on my head and used its paws and teeth to the point where it got a piece of tooth stuck in my head. And I, with the exception of a few staples, don't have much to show for it.
This wasn't Compton and her friend's first encounter with a bear on Admiralty. A few years ago, they were hunting deer in early November. Usually by that time of year, most of the bears are settling down for winter. But Compton says it had been a bad salmon and bear year. On that hunt, a predatory bear approached them, coming within 10 feet before Compton fired a warning shot to scare it off. It's almost unbelievable that she's had two extremely close calls.
There are people that hunt way harder than I do, that have been in Juneau for 8 times as long as I have and have never had something remotely close to this happen.
Still, both Compton and Orr feel like there's nothing they could have done differently to avoid the situation with the mother bear. Department of Fish and Game wildlife biologist Carl Koch agrees.
They're doing what hunters do, and they surprise a bear. It sounded like very close by, too close to use a deterrent. And so, yeah, I'm not judging anything that they did.
Koch says Admiralty is home to one of the highest concentrations of brown bears in the world. And this time of year is when they're especially active as they prepare for hibernation.
But if you think about all the hunters that are out on the landscape and how uncommon something like this is, it's reassuring.
For now, Compton isn't in a rush to head back into brown bear territory.
I feel like I've had my fair share of brown bear encounters, and I don't need any more. Am I going to take up knitting and, like, I don't know, painting rocks? Probably not.
She still has the tiny shard of the bear's tooth. She says maybe she'll put it in a locket. The Alaska Marine Highway System expects to roll out its long-range plan early next year, setting the course for the next 20 years. It was recently discussed at the annual Southeast Conference. As Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports, the final details are still being figured out.
Alaska's ferry system has been working on this extensive plan for the last 2 years.
Our vision is for the 2045 long-range plan to chart a path forward to a thriving system.
Craig Tornga is the director of the Alaska Marine Highway System, or AMHS.
It really defines our vision, sets our goals, and develops our strategies for the future. Also provides the framework for decision-making and our resource allocation, and then ensures that the future actions we take align with our vision.
Tornga addressed the future of the state's ferry system to hundreds who had gathered in Ketchikan last month for the Southeast Conference, which is a regional nonprofit that advocates for economic development. AMHS convened a team to plan for the future. It included members of the conference, contractors, and the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board, which advises the state on the ferry system. The team held meetings with regional ferry groups across the state. And over the past year, they conducted a system-wide survey that received over 2,600 responses. It was compiled by the Anchorage-based McKinley Research Group, led by Katie Berry. She says the number one concern was being able to rely on sailings.
Reliability, reliability, reliability is what the communities and residents most impacted by the marine highway system want.
Like any other boat, it's normal for things to break down on ferries, especially when the state's fleet is aging. Of the 9 AMHS ferries, one is 60 years old, two are 50 years old, and one is 47. There also aren't enough replacement ferries in Alaska's fleet for when things go wrong, meaning vessels get docked and sailings get canceled. The planning team came up with 8 possible long-range service scenarios and pared them down to 4. Now, Barry says, they're figuring out which will be the best one.
I want to be really clear that a plan like this is not something that you publish and next year Craig can snap his fingers and say, great, here's your increase in service for all of these communities. It really will take this dedicated work in each of these focus areas to move on a 20-year path.
One certainty in the long-term plan is replacing the 60-year-old Tustamina that serves the Kodiak and Homer areas and the Aleutians. The Tustamina replacement vessel will have a backup battery system, making it the first hybrid vessel in the fleet. Siemens Energy is the engineering group working on those elements. Engineer Ed Schwartz says hybrid and battery-powered vessels are the future.
When I first started 7-8 years ago working in this kind of systems hybrid business, you would have to go to Scandinavia to actually see one of these vessels running.
Now, he says, hybrid ferries are in New York, Texas, and Washington. He says the newer systems require new safety measures, especially because the service life of ferries ends up being a lot longer than planned.
When you're integrating new technology, you're changing the safety requirements on board the vessel. So training of people is really important. Making sure that we're conforming with the Coast Guard requirements for this new technology.
The new hybrid Tustamina won't be ready for sailing until 2027 or 28. And the estimated $315 million price tag is almost entirely covered by federal dollars. Meanwhile, AMHS plans to have its final long-range plan report done by the end of the year and release the plan to the public at the start of next year. The public still has time to give input. The Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board will take comments at its meeting on October 23rd. Reporting for Coast Alaska in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
If you want to vote this November, time is running out to make sure you're registered. Sunday, October 6th, is the deadline to register to vote in the November 5th election. Candidates for president, U.S. House, and the Alaska legislature will be on the ballot. Most Alaska residents 18 and older are eligible to vote. There are a few ways to register. For most people, the easiest way is to go online to voterregistration.alaska.gov. You'll need your Alaska driver's license or state ID number to register online. If you don't have a state ID or driver's license, you can apply using a paper form. Those are available at many public libraries, city and borough clerk's offices, and state offices like the Division of Elections in Juneau. Those offices will be open this weekend for last-minute registration. Offices close at 4 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. The paper voter registration form is also available online and can be submitted by email, but you have to print it out and sign it. It's also at voterregistration.alaska.gov. Juneau residents should expect temporary right lane closures along Egan Drive tomorrow morning as volunteers remove the remaining flags between 10th Street and Marine Way. They should be done by mid-morning. And KTOO will have updated local election results tonight after the city provides the latest tally of process ballots from Tuesday's election. Go to ktoo.org/elections for the latest update. It's currently 47 degrees and mostly cloudy at the Juneau International Airport. Tonight, rain, possibly heavy at times, with a low around 41 degrees. Rain will continue through the weekend and into next week. That's the latest from the KTOO Newsroom. I'm Adeline Baxter.